This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne. You have reached the hour where we do local talk here in Marion and Polk County, focusing on Salem and Kaiser and the greater area. This is the place to be. It's the only place to be for this kind of local talk for politics, individuals, institutions, ideas, and initiatives. Did I say that twice? Did I get those right?
I think
got all
so.
My eyes
it's
in there.
It's important for the initiatives.
And it's Dave's favorite day of the week. It's a Monday. I love Monday because nothing's gone wrong yet. It's been a pretty early week, and I've all recharged from the weekend.
That doesn't explain why I had to wear the fireman's hat today to work.
And
come
it's
on now.
Glorious day to live in the Mid-Willamette Valley.
Don't you ever have that?
No.
Where you come to work on a Monday and there's lots of fires you got to put out?
I got to put out the fires. No, I just delegate that.
Yeah. I wish I could do that.
All right. Hey, thanks, folks. We've got a great show today. It's been something I've been looking forward to doing for quite some time. My guest, we finally got her scheduled. It's a topic that most of you are unfamiliar with, and it is our goal to educate you on great things happening in the community, interesting things that happen in the community that sometimes are under the radar. So I listened to our guest speak at a Salem Chamber Forum luncheon and had heard about it, her and her husband, prior to this. And Dave, did you know that Salem, as a community, accepts refugees?
What?
Refugees.
No, I did not know that.
So I don't think most people do. And there are so many things to talk about here, where they come from, how they get here, why Salem, why somebody from the Congo would end up in Salem, Oregon, and how do we take care of them? And what is a refugee after all? To answer all of this and more, our guest today is Anya Holcomb in the studio. Anya, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks
it's
for having
so
me.
So great to have you. I think what you're doing is fascinating, in addition to just being really amazing. So you live here in town. You're a Kaiserite, right?
Yes.
So, and you and your husband, you have an organization called Salem for Refugees.
We do.
Okay. So you're helping refugees coming into America that are resettling in Salem find their way.
Yes.
How long have you been doing
this? Yes. We started Salem for Refugees about 3 years ago. And before that, we had recently returned from doing relief and development work in Eastern Europe. And while we were there, we were exposed to the global refugee crisis, came back to Salem, found out resettlement was just starting here, and knew that we had to get involved.
Every time she says something, it comes up with another question in my head. Okay, so has Salem, prior to Salem for Refugees, was Salem accepting any refugees? I think I heard you say that everything was going into Portland if they're coming into Oregon.
Yeah. Yep. For the past 30 years or so, all refugee resettlement in the state of Oregon has happened in and around the Portland metro area. So it was end of 2015, beginning of 2016, that the resettlement agencies decided to expand resettlement to Salem-Kaiser. They were looking for an additional location in addition to Portland metro because of the rising cost of housing up north. So that's why Salem was chosen as a semi-large city that had available
second
resources.
Second largest in Oregon.
Yes, and had some resources and was within a 50-mile radius of Portland, which was required for the agencies.
Well, that doesn't leave a lot of options, really.
let me think.
No. Woodburn's not very big. And let's see. Aurora, they're not very big.
Yeah. No.
How about Dayton?
Oregon's that's right.
Dayton. Okay, so Salem starts to accept these refugees. Let's back up a little bit in your first statement. You were in Eastern Europe.
Yes.
And exposed to refugee crisis that Europe is experiencing. I don't think of Eastern Europe as, and I think my mind goes to the Middle East and the Syrian refugees, Syria, Turkey, Kurds, all of that thing, and people fleeing the conflict there. And I think of them going into Europe, or I guess Western Europe, but mm-hmm. they were also going into Eastern European countries.
Yeah. So I don't know if some of you folks remember back in 2015, it was on the news quite a bit. The refugee crisis was really coming to a head. So what we had was a mass movement of people coming out of Africa and the Middle East, countries that you mentioned, and they were making their way through Eastern Europe on their way to try to get into Western Europe.
Oh.
And there was a point in time in 2015 when a lot of those borders in Eastern Europe were open. And so literally there were thousands of people passing through each day, trying to get into Germany, trying to get into France, trying to get into Italy. And they would pass through Eastern Europe on the way. So we worked with an organization that was helping to run a refugee camp in Macedonia. And so we had a little bit of exposure that way, seeing what they were doing in that camp, getting to meet some of the people who were passing through that camp, hearing their stories, met families. My husband and I have young kids, and we met families that really looked exactly like our family, families from Syria. They lived in their homes for generations. And because of the war, they were forced to fleeing on foot for weeks on end, sleeping in forests, trying to get food along the way, crossing bodies of water in small rafts, some with friends or family who didn't make it, who were killed in the journey.
Oh, my goodness.
And so getting to meet these people, getting to hear their stories, we just thought, you know, this could just as easily be our family, be any of us in this country, had we happened to be born in a part of the world that was war-torn.
And that's the thing about America. We talk about thankfulness here a little bit, especially here in the last month of November, that we really have no conception of the things that you've seen, you and your husband, Doug, and the things that you've seen in America. You think about people being displaced out of their homes, and how long has it been since that happened to Americans? And we live in a sense of complacency, or a sense that it's hard to really relate, because we don't know. You know, like you said, you're there for generations, and it's like, you can no longer live here. You're never coming back here. Have a good life.
Right.
Wow, it's pretty amazing. So Macedonia, that's pretty close to Turkey. So some of them come through Turkey to get to Macedonia. Is that how that happened?
Primarily Greece. Folks were coming from Greece, taking the boats over the Mediterranean.
Little tiny boats.
Wow. And making their way to Macedonia, and then traveling through a number of Eastern European countries. A lot of those countries have since closed their borders, but there was that period of time.
And
where
there were
people are passing
through.
People
jumping in boats that were not safe at all, and pirates taking advantage of them, and we should call them traffickers, really, and putting them in unsafe conditions, and people actually risking and losing their lives just to get away.
Which I think shows how significant the things that they were fleeing from, that they were willing to risk their lives, risk the lives of their kids and their families. You have to be fleeing an incredibly unsafe situation. I talked with people who said, if I would have stayed, I would be dead. And so that's the only reason they were willing to take these risks. And we met people when we were there who had, I remember a day I was in the camp, and they had crossed the boats the day before, and three kids that were with them had died as they were crossing. They would pack about 40 people into these rafts that are meant for 12. And
must be hard to see with kids yourself.
Oh, incredibly, incredibly heartbreaking. And we just knew we had to do something as fellow human beings on the planet.
Okay, this fascinating story. We may have to say for 2 hours, Anya. We're talking to Anya Holcomb of Salem for Refugees. Let's start, before we go to the first break, could you define for us what's a refugee? Because we hear, you know, immigration titles and names, and there's asylum, and what the heck is a refugee by definition?
Yeah, great question. Refugee status is something given by the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. A person flees their country and they apply for refugee status. And that is granted to someone who has been forced to flee their country because of war, persecution, or violence. So officially, definition, a refugee has a well-founded fear of persecution for reasons of race, religion, nationality, political opinion, or membership in a particular social group.
Oh, interesting. So in the cases where you have, you know, attempts at ethnic cleansing, that kind of thing, or we want to get rid of this minority group, and they have to, because they're a minority group, they need to leave.
But it's an important definition to understand, because it's not someone leaving their country simply because they want to get a different job or they're looking for a better life, but it's because they're fleeing out of a well-founded fear that their lives will be taken if they remain.
Yeah, we definitely, as we continue to listen to the conversation, folks, we want to draw a line in our perspective of a refugee as being different than an immigrant. Right? This is totally different than somebody says, well, there's no economic opportunity in my country and I'm just going to go seek it.
Yeah. I think an immigrant is anyone who leaves their country to move to another place for any reason. And so a refugee would be a type of immigrant, but they have a specific definition because they've left for a very particular reason.
All right. We're going to take a break at that, and we'll talk about how that refugee ends up getting steered to Salem, Oregon. I think that's the biggest surprise. You don't think of us as a hotbed of places for people from the Congo to, hey, you know what? I'm going to leave Congo and I'm going to end up in Salem, Oregon, of all places. Stick with us. We're talking to Anya Holcomb of the community-based network Salem for Refugees, and we'll be right back on 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tech Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
And welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave. He's born ready.
Darn right.
Dave Bourne. And our guest today, Anya Holcomb of the refugee program Salem for Refugees. She and her husband, Doug, are co-directors. They have missionary experience, right? So you're from Kaiser, but you met your husband abroad.
I did, yes. He grew up in East Africa, in Sudan and Kenya. And when I was in high school, my family moved. My parents were teaching at an international school in Nairobi. And that's where he and I met.
Wow, in Nairobi. So I've been to Nairobi, in a great country of Kenya.
Yeah.
So he was part of a missionary family?
He was, yes.
Wow,
yes.
What a place to grow up.
Yeah, he grew up there. He speaks Swahili because all his friends were Kenyan growing up. And it's pretty fun because he gets to use his Swahili a lot now.
Wow.
Here in Salem, Kaiser.
I don't run into a lot of Swahili speakers. Not that I know of. You're not just in a cafe or Starbucks downtown and hear people speaking in Swahili. I guess, unless
right.
it's your husband.
Unless it's my husband, that's
refugees.
Right.
All right, we're talking before the break about what a refugee is. And it's a definition set by the United Nations, and people are designated as such. And then there are actually agencies that deal with the resettlement, and that's how we end up getting to Salem, right?
Yeah.
So can you kind of explain the mechanism that somebody goes, I'm in a refugee camp, I'm displaced I can't go home. God knows where you are, but you have the designation as refugee. What happens to them?
Yeah. So most people, and I think a lot of people aren't aware of this, most refugees are in a state of displacement, either in a refugee camp or some sort of temporary dwelling, for between 10 to 20 years. What we're experiencing with the folks that are coming here to Salem is many of them, the kids were born and raised in a refugee camp. Their families have been there 15, 16, 17 years.
Wow.
And
oh.
So someone gets that designation, but that doesn't mean they're then given a place where you can go resettle immediately. So
Let me ask you a question,
yeah.
Anya. So that predates the recent crisis in the Middle East and the whole Syrian conflict, really, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So we're not talking about people who have been displaced the last few years coming out of the Syrian wars.
Yeah, right? Some of the people that are coming are people that left Congo 20 years ago.
Wow.
And have been displaced ever since.
And I think a lot of people would be surprised that there's children.
Many children. Over 50% of the world's refugees are children.
Wow.
Under the age of 18.
So they were young kids and had to flee, or
yeah.
they were born after their parents already had to
yep.
flee.
Yep, absolutely. So what happens is they are displaced, they can apply for resettlement, and then they wait. They don't get to choose which country they may get assigned to. They wait to see when their name may come up on a list. If they're chosen for the United States, they then begin a vetting process that lasts typically between 2 to 3 years. They're vetted with 4 different U.S. security agencies. They are the most vetted form of traveler that ever sets foot in our country. So it's a very intense process. We've had our friends describe to us what it's like, and extremely detailed and intense. And that's after they've been displaced for, you know, somewhere between 10 to 20 years. Then they go through this 2 to 3 year vetting process if they're chosen for the United States. And it's less than 1% of the world's refugees that get chosen for resettlement in any third country, not just the U.S., but any third country.
Well, so they're in a displacement camp. You said temporary a camp or a temporary residence. You're saying that some people are going to live out the rest of their lives displaced without getting resettled, or perhaps not even go home.
Yeah, there is no guarantee. And that's why this is really considered a crisis, the global refugee crisis right now in the world, because the number of displaced people has surpassed any number we've ever seen recorded in human history. And there are simply, for millions of people, no option of anywhere for them to go. They can't return to their home country. They aren't able to gain citizenship or permanent status in their hosting country. And there are simply not enough places for them to go to be resettled in a third country.
Might this be a camp that's run by the UN? I mean, who is providing the sustenance and shelter?
Yeah, most of the refugee camps are run by the UN. An interesting fact that was shocking to me is only about 2.5 million of the world's refugees are actually in refugee camps. So it's actually not a very big percentage of the total number, 25.9 million refugees. So the majority of refugees are living in cities, temporary dwellings, and are not in those official refugee camps.
Well, probably a contributor to the homeless problem in other cities and communities throughout the world. Yeah. All right, so they get the call, they're selected to relocate, and how does that connect them to you?
Yeah. So it's a process by the U.S. State Department, who contracts with 9 what's called voluntary agencies. So this would include World Relief, Catholic Charities, Lutheran Community Services. Mm-hmm. So these 9 agencies throughout the U.S. that actually do the work of resettlement. We have 3 of them who have local branches here in the state of Oregon. So any refugee that's chosen to come to Oregon comes through one of these 3 agencies, and they're Catholic Charities, Lutheran Community Services Northwest, and Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. So if a refugee is chosen, their information for Oregon, their information is given to one of these agencies. They're given very basic information about the family, what country they're from, what languages they speak, what their names are, what their birth dates are. That's pretty much it. It's pretty limited. Wow. And what date they'll be arriving at the Portland airport. And so then that resettlement agency gets a certain amount of funding from the State Department per person, not a large amount of funding, to do the initial work of resettlement, which is called reception and placement. So typically the agencies work with families anywhere from 90 to 180 days, depending on which program that they come through, providing case management and then a certain checklist of things that they need to complete, medical screening, get the kids enrolled in school, get enrolled with services at DHS. So they have a checklist that they go through.
Okay. And that's you guys.
Salem,
right?
Exactly. So we partner really closely with our resettlement agency partners who resettle refugees here in Salem. And so when they get a new case that they decide will be a good fit for Salem, they contact us and we work really closely with them, putting together resources and volunteer teams to help fulfill many of those items on that checklist, as well as to continue providing support even after their time with the resettlement agency comes to an end. We continue to walk alongside those families.
So you're a community-based network, and you're establishing a nonprofit status and so forth. In the process of this, I know that you're co-directors with your husband, Doug. You've got connections and a relationship with Salem Leadership Foundation, which is a community gem, of course. And you're both affiliated with Salem Alliance Church, right?
Yes.
So again, it's one of those, Mayor Taylor used to call this the collaboration city.
Mm-hmm.
It really requires a lot of different people, but you get human beings assigned to you mm-hmm. and a checklist. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah. You may not speak our language, but here's 5 human beings and here's the checklist. Get them in school, get them jobs, get them education, get them learning English, right?
Yep.
So now they're here, they've arrived. Tell us a little bit about the program. We would take 2 hours to try to discuss this whole topic, so I'll try to get everything. Tell us a little bit about the program. I know that you're assigned in teams.
Yep.
And kind of share the load and get them to integrate into society, because it's got to be overwhelming. Welcome to America. Hi, you don't know me. You can't speak my language, but get in the car.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
as it would be for any of us, I often, try to imagine this, because we've lived overseas at different points in life, and just thinking, even going overseas with a lot of support and a lot of things already taken care of for us, and trying to imagine these families coming here, first time English for most of them. Most of them that come to Salem are what's considered free cases, so they're not coming to join family members. So most don't know anybody when
they
get here.
How many people are coming as a family unit?
Most are families that we're getting. Most are families with children, yeah. But they are not joining extended family. They don't have pre-existing relationships here. And so you think of how overwhelming that would be. These families are incredibly resilient people, mm-hmm. Because it takes a lot of courage to do what they do. So we try to really walk alongside them and support them in that process. We have something called mentor teams, which are teams of 6 to 8 volunteers that are paired with every new family to walk alongside them as friends and as guides through their journey of resettlement. And then we have what's called resource teams. And at this point, we have 11 different teams that are focused wow. on developing infrastructure and providing resources in key areas. So those include housing, healthcare, employment, English, education, transportation, technology, financial literacy, and so on. So those areas that we found to be really key as folks are working on gaining independence and becoming self-sufficient.
Wow. That's a lot of teams. That's a lot of volunteers, I assume.
A lot of volunteers. Yeah, close to 300 volunteers.
This is wow. far beyond the Ministry of Salem Alliance.
Oh, right? Absolutely. Isn't this is community-wide.
Yep. Community-wide, and the faith community is heavily involved, right?
Yep.
But it's not exclusive.
It's not exclusive. Yeah, we're people of faith and people of goodwill coming together. The one thing we share in common is a desire to welcome our new neighbors, to treat them in the same way that we would want to be treated if we were the ones in their shoes. So our mission is to bring people and resources together to empower refugees, our new neighbors, to thrive here in Salem Kaiser.
When Anya and her husband spoke at the Salem Chamber Forum, which was great, there were some videos and some examples of these teams, and where someone's like, well, I can help them learn to drive, or I can help them learn how to grocery shop. And somebody else and said, well, I can help them learn English. And these teams are kind of wrapping around them because there's so much to do. You can't just have a caseworker.
Right.
Right? And that's pretty amazing
right.
to have that kind of organization. And are you and Doug, like, your job to wrangle everything into a cohesive functional unit?
Yeah. So we work, you know, kind of working with all the different organizations. There's so many amazing community partners. This is really a collaboration with Salem Kaiser Public Schools and Chariots and multiple businesses and Salem Health and West Salem Clinic. I mean, I could just go on and on. Mid Valley Literacy Center, Chemeketa Community College. And really, with it's taken all of us to come together. And I think it's a beautiful thing to watch the community working together in this way. It's actually been the most fulfilling work I've ever been part of.
Well, that is amazing. And I appreciate your comments on how incredibly they're screened, you know, especially in the last presidential election, and vetting became such a big word. But to know that they've been displaced for a decade and vetted through four or five agencies and so forth, this is a totally different situation. All right. When we get back, you're going to tell me where they're coming from. You're going to tell me that our new Americans, I love that phrase, by the way, the new Americans and the new Salemites and Kaiserites, where did they come from? We're listening to Anya Holcomb of Salem for Refugees on Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Rich Gansky, and this segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
And welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne in our studio, my honored guest, Anya Holcomb. And I just want to thank you for coming in. I think this refugee topic is fascinating, and I think it's an incredible experience for Salem to learn about and get a little bit of expansion and what the reality is in the world. We were talking in a previous segment about how people really have no perception of what that would be like when you pick up your belongings and it might just be your child and you walk away. And as you walk away, and I think there was a story about this when you were presenting at the Chamber Forum luncheon, and like some families were leaving and one family's house like blew up mm-hmm. as they left, or they didn't get out in time. And
oh man,
you're walking yeah. out to leave your home in your life behind. And as you're leaving your home, your town is being destroyed.
Yeah. Yeah. Many of the families have seen things you don't even want to imagine, seeing their homes, their belongings destroyed, seeing people they love killed before their eyes. It's really things that are it's just you can't even comprehend.
So I teased this before the break. The families that are coming in, they're coming from how many countries and where are they coming from?
So far in Salem Kaiser, we have gotten to welcome families from 12 different countries.
Wow.
Yes, primarily Africa and the Middle East. But I'll tell you the list. So we have people who've come from Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Syria, Somalia, Democratic Republic of Congo, Central African Republic, Ivory Coast, Sudan, South Sudan, and Ukraine, which would be our one outlier from Africa and the Middle
wow.
East.
Wow. That is a lot.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking even before the show with Anya about, you know, in Europe, the totally different situation where they get waves of refugees. And sometimes that can end up with a pocket of a minority community that never gets to integrate. But this is a different situation. And they're certified refugees, and then they're vetted, as it were, and then they're placed, and they have a support system to do this. What I love about it is sometimes people like these end up being the best Americans. They end up being the best immigrants that are so proud to be American, so appreciative of being American, sometimes more appreciative of being American than Americans that were born here. Because they've seen the worst the world has to offer.
Yeah, these are incredibly resilient, hardworking people. Studies have shown that refugees in America actually have a higher rate of starting successful small businesses. It's the first question we get from most families, even within the first few days after they get here. Where can I work? I need to get a job. I need to provide for my family. Where can I work? Who can I talk to get a job? It's on the forefront of their minds. They also have been shown to have lower crime rate than native-born Americans. So these are people that are ready to contribute and thankful to be here. And it's really just delightful people to
Such
get to work with and to be friends with.
I remember I lived in Los Angeles for a brief period of time, unfortunately, but there were people from Guatemala, you know, Honduras, places where there were no opportunities. And they come and they're like, oh, you mean all I have to do is work three jobs and I'll be able to save enough for my own car and my own apartment and maybe in my own home? That's all I have to do? It was just like the perspective has totally changed, and they work their three jobs and some of the money they're giving away to back home. But they were like, this is awesome, because there's no opportunity where they come from. And for your refugees, there's no home. In the home from.
I just can't imagine living in a refugee camp for an unknown period of time, and the conditions cannot be that great.
Yeah.
It's depending on what camp, the kind of different levels of conditions, but no one is living in very great conditions or any form of luxury whatsoever.
Well, so. Every refugee camp that I've ever seen on TV is a tent city in the middle of a desert somewhere.
Yeah. Yep.
It's not like the one, it was outside of Turkey, I believe it was. It's just unfathomable, the conditions. And I didn't know that they were there for 15 to 20 years or more. That's wow.
So you mentioned they come here and like, okay, can I get a job? Can I work? Where can I work? I want to supply for my family.
That's an employee I want.
Tell us, are you having businesses successfully cooperating, collaborating, and hiring people?
Yeah, we've had some great businesses here in Salem-Keizer who have stepped up to be those initial employers, because most folks are learning English for the first time when they arrive. Most of them, not as a second language, it's typically like their sixth or seventh language. Many of them speak multiple languages, but are learning English. But needing to get a job right away where you don't need to have a high level of English skills. So Kettle Chips has been a great employer who've employed quite a few refugees. Don Poncho has also been a great employer. Sparrow Furniture, which is a new social business here in Salem right off Broadway, has a very unique business model where they will employ refugees for 1 to 2 years, and it's a training program. And they get English lessons as part of the workday. So the first hour of every workday is English lessons, which is incredible. And then they're making these beautiful handcrafted items. Do a plug for them for the holidays. If anyone's looking for amazing items.
Sparrow Furniture.
Made by refugees. Yeah.
That is so hot. Right here in Salem, Oregon.
Yes.
So that's on Broadway.
Yep.
That's pretty close to Broadway Commons.
It is. It's between Broadway Commons and the Hub, Barrel and Keg, kind of right in there.
All right, right near Market Street. So check that out, folks, if you want to support them and look and see what kind of wares they create. That's amazing. So they're making furniture.
Yep, they are. And other great employers, Capital Manor has been a great employer.
Sackcloth and Ashes.
Sackcloth and Ashes, which is right by Sparrow Furniture, is also employing refugees. So it's been wonderful to have some of these employers step forward. And then as people are getting higher level of English skills, Chemeketa has been working closely with us on developing further training programs for people who may come with degrees from their countries or certain skills from their countries that they need a degree completion program, or they need to get those degrees transferred to something that will be recognized here, or if they want to get specific trades such as welding electrician, things like that. Chemeketa has and is continuing to develop similarly great programs.
We're talking to Anya Holcomb, Salem for Refugees, community-based network. And some things I just want to hammer home in our conversation about this is these are not people who are currently homeless in Salem.
No.
Right?
No.
These are not illegal immigrants.
No.
Right? These are people who have been ushered through a State Department process along with partners, refugee partners, to relocate them from a state of being displaced.
Yes.
Actually, they will forevermore be displaced until we have a new home. Totally different population, and sometimes in the conversation about people in America, be they, we were talking before the show about asylum seekers, immigrants through legal channels, immigrants through illegal channels, and refugees. They sometimes intersect in the Venn diagram, but otherwise a lot of very different subsets of individuals.
Right.
Right. So you're finding them jobs. They're learning English, learning job skills. You're putting them in schools. And let's talk a little bit about that. So the kids are coming from the refugee camp, probably somewhere where no one's speaking English. And you hand them over to the Superintendent Perry and say, here's the child. Would you please teach them? Right? Yeah. That's so unfair.
Salem Kaiser Public Schools has been amazing. From the very beginning, they have been working really hard and partnering with us, getting resources in place. They've hired several community school outreach coordinator positions of some amazing employees who speak the primary languages of our refugee population and work very closely with the families and with the students to help them get integrated. There are newcomer centers at North Salem High School and McKay High School and Waldo Middle School, where the middle school and high school students all go to those programs, no matter where they live in the city, initially, where they're getting really intensive English to help prepare them. You would not believe how fast these kids learn English.
Really?
The parents, you know, like any of us adults, it takes a couple years, but the kids will come in maybe speaking five words of English when they first get here. 6 months later, you'll be talking to them and can hardly even tell that they moved here from another country.
And our language has so many eccentricities too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a hard language to to grasp.
Yeah. Yeah. It is quite impressive. And so we're seeing kids being very successful in school. I believe we've had four refugee students now who have graduated from high school on time here in Salem, which is, I mean, when you think about a lot of the lack of educational opportunities they've had before they get here, being able to come and graduate on time is amazing. So we have several students who are now attending Chemeketa, and I believe these are future leaders in our community.
Wow. There's so many other things to talk about. Before we go to that, Let's plug how people can help, because you're talking about your teams and they don't just fabricate out of nowhere, right? Let's talk about your teams and how somebody's listening right now and said, I would like to help integrate these people and welcome to America. How can they help you? How do they reach out?
Yes, we always have a need for volunteers and some really great volunteer opportunities. Joining these mentor teams, as I mentioned earlier, is a great way to get involved. If you really want to walk alongside one family and support them, come to the airport, help welcome them when they first get here, help them learn how to grocery shop, help them open a bank account, help introduce them to your friends and help them really make this feel like this is their home. Show them the local parks, take them to the beach. So if you'd like to join one of those teams, we would love to talk to you about that. SalemForRefugees.org is our website. There's a link there. You can click volunteer and send us an email and we'll get back to you. We also have our resource teams, which have specific volunteer opportunities in all those key resource areas. So employment, we're looking for employment coaches who want to work one-on-one to help refugees find jobs. Our English team pairs English teachers and English tutors with our English partners that have programs throughout the city. We have people that go do in-home tutoring for kids. So a number of opportunities depending on what kind of time and schedule you have available, but we would love to talk with you about that.
That is a broad net of needs right there. Say your website again with your best radio voice now.
Yes.
So
yes.
SalemForRefugees.org.
That's it.
Salem for Refugees. You have to do it now.
Okay. www.salemforrefugees.org.
I love it. We're talking to Anya Holcomb of Salem for Refugees. She's co-directors with her husband, Doug. It's a community-based network. I love the fact that it is such a collaboration of nonprofits and businesses and good-hearted people, right? And a little bit of government as well. And especially if I'm fond of the element of the faith community interjecting. We're going to have just a few more minutes with you. You stick around a little bit.
Yes.
This beautiful Monday. So stick with us. We're going to be right back. We're going to answer some final questions with Anya about the refugees in Salem on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tech Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
And welcome back, folks, to one of the most interesting hours I think we've had in our year plus. We've had a Newsmakers here with Brent and Dave talking about a refugee program in Salem, presumably in Kaiser as well. We don't discriminate against Kaiser. We
let
people,
right. Yeah. Lots of refugees in Kaiser, too.
Anya Holcomb is our guest from Salem for Refugees, affiliations with Salem Alliance Church, which is an amazing, amazing community resource, Salem Leadership Foundation, other organizations of faith and social services and volunteerism and businesses and nonprofits wrapping their arms around people who will never see their homeland probably ever again. 12 countries represented of people who are coming to, most people are not realizing that there's people from 12 countries just landing here who are refugees. We just don't think of Salem as that community. Like maybe they're going to Atlanta or maybe they're integrating into Memphis, but Salem, Oregon.
And which is not anywhere near the climate that they came from.
Yes. A lot of people are very cold, especially if they arrive in the fall or winter.
Right. And they're coming from the Congo or whatever.
Central Africa.
Can't imagine that.
Yeah.
Well, and I noticed there was the whole swath of the Middle East. You were mentioning earlier Afghanistan and Iraq and Iran. Was that true?
Yeah.
And Syria and so forth. So, and the Ukraine, or Ukraine, as Bill O'Reilly likes to call it.
Right.
Ukraine. I don't know. All right. Hey, a few things to hit on. Obviously, we were talking before the break about people volunteering to be just a member of a team. You don't have to do it all. Just come help them learn English. Help them navigate a grocery store such that they have never seen. They can't read the labels and the money's foreign and everything else. You can help them navigate that. All sorts of categories that Anya was telling us about. So when they get here, you have to provide for everything. They have to, well, you have to feed them and find them schooling and da-da-da. Where do they live, Anya? How do we find them housing?
Yeah, so we have new neighbors who are living actually all over Salem-Kaiser. I would say there isn't one particular area that has a whole lot of people. It's really pretty spread out. Our housing resource team works with property managers and landlords to find landlords that are willing to rent to refugees. They come, obviously, without having some of the typical things that a landlord is going to look for, a rental history in America. Well, this is going to be their first place. Or a guarantee of income three times the rent. Well, they're coming in, they don't even have a job yet.
Yeah.
So finding those landlords that are willing to work with us, and there are some incredible landlords who have done that. So both with apartment complexes as well as even individual homeowners, one of the neatest things that's come out of the housing team is a group of investors. We call them the Stembridge Homes because this was started by an amazing couple in our community, Joan and Jim Stembridge. And what they've done so far with five houses is they have purchased homes, renovated them for the purpose of renting them to refugees at below market rates. And they're doing this as an investment. So they're taking their investment dollars out of the stock market, putting it into real estate, and they are getting monthly rent, but doing it at a rate that our new neighbors can afford. And one family has since purchased their home. So they're now homeowners.
Oh.
And then the investors were able to use that home to buy another home. So there's been just some different creative models, as well as just some great property managers and landlords who have been willing to work with us.
And explain for us who's paying the freight as they come to America, and there's a time lag of them getting on, you know, feet under them. Who's paying for the freight for all of that?
Great question. So all refugees are given initially some welcome money that comes through the resettlement agency. So that's through the State Department, and it's a certain allotment per person. I can't remember the exact amount. It's around $1,000 per person. Yes,
okay.
That's a lump sum, and that gets used up, as you can imagine, very quickly. That goes for their rent for the first few months. And then it's gone. And then we have something called the Housing Stability Program that is through a very generous donation from Temple Beth Shalom here in Salem. And it's through a partnership with Family Promise, formerly Salem Interfaith Hospitality, that actually administers the program. And what it is a program that kicks in after the resettlement agency dollars run out and provides graduated rent subsidies for up to 1 year after families arrive. So starts out covering 90% of the rent, then goes down to 70, then 50, and you know, so mm-hmm. on, with the goal that families will be able to cover the costs on their own by the time that runs out. And it comes with case management from Family Promise, and we've seen a lot of success from that program, giving families time to be able to get on their feet.
Wow, that's such a chore. It's monumental, but it sounds like with many hands makes light work.
Absolutely. Yep. And the Salem community has stepped up in amazing ways.
So you've got kids, you're married to Doug, you met him in East Africa. Doug, the Swahili speaker, gets to speak to some of these Central African, right? And now you're working together. You're co-directors. How do you make that work? What's that like? I've been in business for almost 30 years, and I can tell you, and my wife and I, we have never worked in the same business at the same time, but you're trying to do these challenging tasks and work with your life partner yeah. and your organizational partner at the same time.
Yeah.
How do you divide the duties?
We actually love working together, and we both have different things that we're good at. And so, you know, we kind of look at who's going to do this and who's going to do this. And it's actually worked out really well. We get that question a lot. How do you work with your spouse? but we love it. We actually really, really enjoy it.
That is very cool. So I'm struck, and I have to put in a plug because I love it when organizations of faith step up and do these things. The Catholics, I come from a Lutheran now family, and so the Catholic Community Services, the Ecumenical Ministries, you see, they're really intricately involved and work with the State Department to have that happen. So a shout out to them, and I love that, you know, even in my parents' time, that some of these denominations would have been fighting each other and believed that they all were going to be condemned to Hades and so forth. So it's really cool yeah. to see them working together to make this happen. Give us an idea, if you would, what you see for Salem for Refugees into the future. I mean, is it going to grow? What's our capacity? And actually, let's talk about America's capacity to receive refugees.
Yeah. So for Salem for Refugees in particular, we just celebrated our third year anniversary. And we were looking back and kind of reflecting on what's happened over the last 3 years. And it makes us so excited for what's going to happen in the next three and so on. We've actually had two visits from the State Department in Washington, D.C. The Director of Refugee Resettlement for all of the United States and the Deputy Director each came on separate visits to come and see what's happening here in Salem-Keizer, because they said this is one of the most unique models they've ever seen in the country. Because it's this community-based, you're having support from within the community. It's not just the government saying, you know, here's this official program for these refugees, but it's the community saying, these are our new neighbors and we want them here and we want to welcome them. And we believe they have so much to offer to our community. I truly believe Salem-Keizer is a better place than we were 4 years ago because we have these new neighbors here. So what we want to see is we want to see that grow and continue. We want to see Salem for Refugees become more and more established in the community and be an organization that will be here welcoming new neighbors for years and years to come. So we have a lot of dreams with how we want to see our volunteer program grow, how we want to refine our volunteer training, staff that we want to hire, becoming our own 501c3, mm-hmm. and really making Salem-Keizer a place that can receive refugees for the next decades.
We were talking before the show, before we went out of time, we're going to talk about the national picture. We're only accepting, because the number of the people that the U.S. will accept as refugees is set by the president, and it's currently at 18,000. It's been as high as, 40,000 and more?
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's been up at,
that's a public policy decision.
96,000, 100,000 in the past, yeah.
Really? 96,000 to 100,000 in a year?
Yeah, wow. Yep. So the average since the beginning of the resettlement program has been about 65,000 to 70,000 a year, but it fluctuates each year. The president sets a refugee admission ceiling and says this is the highest amount of refugees that we will accept in a given year.
Okay, so what control does the local organization have as far as how much it can grow and how much the community can absorb?
Local organizations and the resettlement agencies have virtually no control over how many refugees will come into the country. There is a new interesting law that requires local opt-in for refugee resettlement. This is brand new, never been done before. So it's requiring governors and counties to opt in and say they want to receive refugees in order for resettlement to happen here. So the resettlement agencies are in the midst of working with the counties here in Oregon, working with the governor to get that process completed. But we have virtually no say on how many people come, because that all is set through the federal government.
Our guest is Anya Holcomb. She and her husband, Doug, are co-directors of Salem for Refugees. As we wrap this up, Anya, did you imagine when you left Kaiser and your family moved to Nairobi that you were going to come back and this was going to be your future, or did you have other plans?
Never, ever would have imagined it. I love Salem Kaiser and loved growing up here. Never thought I would be living here as an adult with my family and doing work that I love with people from all corners of the globe.
You thought you were going to go to Central Africa or Central Eastern Africa and come back and have the American life? And
We thought we would actually be overseas. We love working with other cultures. And so this just feels incredible that we can be here close to family and friends and working with people from all over the world.
Well, thank you so much for being here and sharing the story and the mission. And I hope some people have been inspired to help. SalemForRefugees.org.
That's it.
And the website. And that's Anya Holcomb, our guest on Newsmakers. Let's do this again tomorrow, folks. Thanks to you for joining Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
We'll see you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Fenton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.